Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Muskegon, Michigan, the 10th of 11 children. His mom died when he was 2 and a half, and his first jobs were washing cars and shining shoes. He went on to become the highest-ranking African-American in the history of the Big Three. He's the past president of Boy Scouts of America and the managing partner of a private equity firm. Governor Snyder recently appointed him to serve as Detroit Public Schools emergency manager. His name, Roy Roberts. And I'm Jack Krasula. And this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Krasula, and we're with the new emergency manager of the Detroit Public Schools, Roy Roberts, a great friend. Roy, you've been on before. Welcome back. It's great to have you.
Well, it's good to be back with you, Jack. It's always good to be with you.
Can you start by talking about your childhood and your parents?
Well, as you indicated, I was one of 10 or 11, and I had a father that had limited education, formal education himself, but was a stickler for education and pushed all of us to be the best we could be academically. My mother died when I was 2 and a half, of course, and we were very, very poor, didn't have books in our home because he couldn't afford it. And he couldn't help with my homework because he had very limited formal education. But he was the wisest man that I ever knew, and he moved us all in the right direction. And somewhere along the way, Jack, I got really excited about not wanting to be last, not wanting to be called a dummy, and I got hooked on education. And the people that I just fell in love with and respected were teachers and coaches, and when I played sports. So it changed my life.
One common thing I've had in every guest, Roy, for these 6-plus years is that they had a great mom who believed in them, encouraged them, tough love. With your mom, Irma, passing at 2 and a half, who did that for you?
Well, I think my father was Miss Mom and Pop. And then by the same token, I have some sisters that were old enough really to be my mother, because I had a nephew that was 2 months younger than I was. So strong family. Strong family in the absence of a mother. It was a strong family that held us all together. We all had tons of chores. We had things to do, and you were going to respond. You were going to do it. My father didn't. He was going to be your father first, and after you solved all the issues, then he'd be your friend. But not until he was a father and taught us to do the right things.
10 of the 11 children got college degrees.
Yes, they did.
You go, and for 17 years you worked at Lear Sigler. You went up the chain, and then you took a pay cut to go to GM.
Well, I did. I had a great time at Lear Sigler. It was a great company. I was on the avionics side of the business. And, you know, here locally, we think of Lear as the automotive company, which was a sister company. General Motors came along and recruited me to join them. And I decided that, Roy, if you really want to make a difference and you think that you're pretty good and you can play with the guys who are good, then why wouldn't you go with General Motors? Talked to my wife, who was an educator, and she was director of health service for the Grand Rapids Board of Education. And we agreed that if I was in GM and if I was doing well, I might get transferred, and that might impact her career. And we agreed that, or she agreed, that she would subordinate her career to mine. And that's what we did. We moved a lot. We had great, great assignments, and it served us well.
You mentioned that you had sisters who were old enough to be your mother. Anybody that meets Maureen says she's young enough to be your daughter.
She says she is, too. So everybody's even.
You became the highest-ranking African-American in the history of the Big Three. And at one point, they had you be plant manager of the Tarrytown, New York assembly plant, which was the worst plant on all the metrics throughout the GM system. Absenteeism, union grievances, warranty claims, etc. And 9 months after you took that job, metric-wise, that plant was number one or two in each one of those. How did you transform it?
Well, it was really simple in retrospect. I can tell you that it was all about people. It was about getting people involved in the process. Lower level salaried people, lower level hourly people, and getting them to identify how we compare with all of our competition. And all of a sudden, they start to stick their chest out, get their head a little higher, and to really make a difference. We bought the school board through every 6 weeks. We bought the city fathers through about every 6 weeks. And we let people explain to them where we fared in the marketplace. And it really created a lot of pride. I worked with the UAW, president of the union, Ray Calore, who was the oldest reigning president of a local in the United States of America. And we did some absolutely great work. And I say we, because I would want everybody to understand it's never one person or a big man theory. It's people coming together that want to make a difference, that can make a difference.
That was 1987. In 1999, you were promoted to GM's VP of Sales and Marketing. And as such, it was a $100 billion enterprise consisting of 9,000 employees. How'd you run that, Roy Roberts?
Well, you run it with a lot of good people. I had a ton of really great people with me and people who wanted to make a difference. And I'll tell you, Jack, it was more than $100 billion. It was probably $140 billion. But there's just more zeros. And it simply means that you better have the very best people that you can find. And I'll tell you, Jack, I had some of the best people. We had 7,800 car dealers, U.S., Mexico, and Canada, and a great group of people for distribution. We restructured North America from a distribution standpoint. And just having, we had centralized distribution in Detroit for years, the history of General Motors. And we decided that there were differences of opinions and taste in different parts of the country. So we put a sales office in New York, one in Chicago, one in Atlanta, Dallas, and L.A. And I think it has served the corporation well.
Time after time, you've been a pathfinder in your career. Where do you get the courage to take on these huge challenges? And how are you successful time after time?
I've never seen a problem that didn't have a solution. And in some cases, I didn't plan to take on that challenge. It happened. And if you take this challenge, which I think is the largest that I have ever had, and I think the most meaningful, the governor gave me a call. There were some things he wanted to accomplish in reforming education, kindergarten through college in the state of Michigan, and says, we want you to go and do this job. And we talked about it when I saw how committed he was. And the state treasurer was also committed. Wife and I talked about it, and she says, you love kids. I love kids. You love education. I love education. We know what it did to us and for us. And if we can make a difference in the lives of some of these kids, we should take this on. And so here I am, and I'm really excited about it.
We're talking to Roy Roberts. Many people believe he will not be successful in this latest role. I've known Roy Roberts for 10-plus years. I wouldn't bet against Roy Roberts. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with Roy Roberts, an amazing human being, the past president of the Boy Scouts of America. Roy, you're 72 years old. You're in great shape. You and Maureen have a great life. You've got your family. You've got golf. You've got travel. You're the American dream. And you get a call from Governor Snyder. Tell us about that meeting with Governor Snyder and Andy Dillon.
Well, interestingly, they asked me, they said Robert Bob would be leaving the Detroit public school system. And they wanted to talk to me and see if I would consider coming out of quasi-retirement to take on the responsibility, and says, will you come in and talk to the governor? I did, came in on a Sunday, drove down to see him on a Monday. I was sitting in his conference room, and he walked in 2 minutes late and apologized profusely for being late. And I said to myself, this is a serious businessman that really wanted to do some meaningful work, and that really impacted me. And we went through the conversation about, he says, Michigan run through Detroit. And if I can't help to move Detroit forward, I can't reinvent Michigan. He said, now, the biggest single problem I have in Detroit is the Detroit public school system. The kids are not being properly educated. And they got a financial situation that really has to be abated and reversed. And we need you to go do it. He said, let me tell you something else, Roy. He says, a white guy can't go do this in Detroit. He says, you got to do it. I said, well, we agree on that. He said, I can't pay you what you're worth. I said, well, that's two things we agree on. So we're off to a great start. And this can't be about money. This has to be about a commitment to wanting to help 66,000 kids. I was one of those kids once. I was one of those little kids that we didn't have money. I didn't get a mother telling me what to do. I had a father, and I talked about the older siblings. But I know what education can do for a person. It can turn dreams into reality. And my wife is the exact same way in the same place. And what I didn't say, Jack, is the harder I worked and the more I tried, the more people tried to help me. So in my life, I've received a lot of help because I don't believe any man or woman is an island. And we owe it to these kids to do everything we can to make a difference. And if they fail, this whole region, this nation fail, and we can't let that happen. I think this is the biggest problem in America.
Tell us about the DPS today and its 66,000 young people.
Well, it's a school system that, by any measure, was not properly educating the kids to be competitive on a state level and certainly on a national level. And you can't even start to talk about internationally and globally because, and we have to talk about that because it's a global world now. And you have kids in China, Japan, and other countries going to school, a longer school day, a longer school year, a more rigorous process than we have. And our kids will compete with kids they have never seen, will never see. And those kids will eat our breakfast, our lunch, and our dinner if we don't do the right job. And if our kids don't get that education, it's not the kids' fault. It's our fault. And Jack, I often say, if you want to find great schools, don't follow the students. Follow the parents. Where parents are involved, teachers walk a little taller. Principals walk a little taller. We all do a little better job. And we all want parental involvement. All the teachers want it. All the principals want it. And the kids need it.
You've had this role for a little more than 3 months. When you got here, you had 31 direct reports. You've eliminated two-thirds of the $327 million debt going forward. How have you done it, and what else have you done to date?
Well, when I came to this job, I brought a financial person with me, just a great financial person, and who 20 years ago was chief financial officer at Detroit Public Schools. And that was critical because I had about 5 weeks to get a budget ready for 2012. And he rode herd on that process for me. We got a balanced budget that we turned into the state. It's subsequently been approved. We were able to get more of the money going to the classroom, 89.4%. All the funds coming in and next year will be aimed at the principal, the teacher, and the student. We think that's critical instead of maybe 60, 62% of the money being used and the majority being used somewhere else. We had the 31 people that you talked about. Over half of those people were contract people, not fully employees, not committed to day-to-day and long-term like regular employees. We've removed all of those from the system. And we've got some people that are doing double duty in some cases and doing an outstanding job. I couldn't be happier about it. I tell you, we all the contracted services we had, we canceled all the contracts. Not because the contractors were bad or did negative things. We signed, in some cases, some contracts that were not appropriate. For instance, we had a contract where we were paying for 190,000, 200,000 students, and we only have 65,000. It was an old contract. So by canceling those contracts and by rebidding them, we got the appropriate current costs for those contracts. So a lot has taken place. And, you know, the governor and I have rolled out our EAS program for the entire state, educating the bottom 5% of students throughout the state of Michigan. So we are not standing still. We're moving. We're moving fast. We're moving very deliberately. And we want to prove to parents in this city that this is a different school system. This is an improved school district, and we're going to make a difference. And the big push now is in the area of attendance. If our kids are undereducated, then we've got to have them in school. They can't miss 40 days of school or 50 days of school. That's unacceptable. And we're going to make sure that we're here getting the job done. Security. We're going to make sure we enhance the security in this area so that parents are comfortable and students are comfortable in a great learning environment.
What do you say to somebody that's worked in this system for 20, 30 years that says, Roy, I've done my best for 25 years. It's not my fault. Why am I losing my job, or why am I getting my pay cut or benefits cut? It's not fair, Roy. Promised to me.
Two things. When I came here, it was clear to me that I was here for one reason. It's an emergency. I'm the emergency manager of the Detroit Public School System. The emergency is in two categories. One, academic, which is absolutely the worst. It's destroying kids. Number two is the financial system. Nobody is going to come along and solve that financial issue or that academic issue for us. That's our responsibility. Individually and collectively, we have to do that. We're ramping up the academic process, and you don't see that overnight. Believe me, it's coming. The financial piece, we have to attack it. So that's why everybody had to take a 10% cut, because the teachers didn't cause this necessarily, and the principals didn't cause it. We all did it. In some regards, it's kind of where the auto industry was 3 years ago. And if we don't solve it, you can't get to the other side and be right with the world. We will not be able to give these kids a proper education if we don't get the financial side right. So that's why I made the decision for the 10% cut.
You signed an agreement with Governor Snyder, and you immediately took a 10% cut as well.
Well, it was for everyone, you know. It's equality of sacrifice. It's equality of sacrifice. We said we want everyone, and we talked. We said also we want to go to 2080 on health care and dental. Well, that's where most people are, and I will tell you that we had some people that were at 10. Some unions, we have 8 different unions, and we had some that were at 0. So we said everybody's going to go to 20. And that's the governor's push throughout the state of Michigan.
We're talking to Roy Roberts, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Roy Roberts, the new Detroit Public Schools emergency manager. Roy, talk to us about tenure, teacher's tenure.
Well, you know, it's the only profession that I know of where you can work for a few years and you're protected for the rest of your life. I don't think lawyers get that. I don't think doctors get that. I don't know of any other profession where that prevails. I think that if you're good, you're good. And you can stand on your own merit when you're really good. And I think that the consideration that legislature is looking at right now, just extending the length of that, as far as I'm concerned, is a good thing. I think even a larger problem, because most teachers are good, so we shouldn't be confused. Most of our teachers are really good people and want to do a good job. And I think you're just putting another piece of insurance in place by saying their tenure, their time to get tenured is just a little bit longer. Tougher issue. If you have someone who is not doing the job and you want to remove them from the system, I know of no other system that is as difficult as this system to remove a person that is not performing. For instance, and I would never mention a name on a situation like this, we bought 40,000 computers last year. I wasn't even here when that happened. We're wiring all the schools. We trained all the teachers first. And the very second day, a person took their computer to a pawn shop and pawned it. We terminated that person. The state tenure committee bought that person back. What message is that sending to kids? What message is that sending to parents? It shouldn't be that if that had happened in corporate America or anywhere else, that person would have been out of there. And I think that's the way it has to be. We have to send messages in this organization, this institution, that we're going to run it right. We're going to be held accountable. And we're going to hold everybody in the organization accountable for doing a good job. If you don't, you're allowing people to hurt kids, and I won't participate in that process.
You've told me in the past, and I quote, "Culture will eat strategy for breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day." A year from now, what's the culture going to be of the Detroit public school system?
Let there be no doubt in your mind. The culture is going to be, we don't accept failure as a norm. Mediocrity will not stick with us. It's going to be about winning. And winning is doing one thing. And that's developing a student to be the best that that student can possibly be. That's going to be the culture. That's going to be the attitude. No excuses.
In a couple of weeks, the schools go back. The kids come back, the teachers. And you talk, Roy, about creating the bug of education. How do you give a young person the bug of education?
Well, I'll tell you, we just completed summer school, 38,000 students, and that's more than New York City had, and they've got a million students. So it was a great summer program, and 553 students graduated from that program. Now, school is going to start. And last year, it was less than ultra successful from the start. People were complaining all over town. Teachers were not in the classroom. A lot of supplies were not where they should have been. We are working every hour imaginable to make sure we get off to a great start. We also have a culture here where kids don't come to school the first 7 to 8 days. We're saying we want you in school every day, all day, every hour. And we're telling parents the same thing. You've got to get involved in the success of your children and their education. So we're pushing off the hard to make sure this startup is not just a good startup. And we says our campaign is year in and back to school. We're going to tell you that after you're in, we're going to do something with that child when they're in, and that's give them a better education. And we're going to go after it, Jack, like no one has before, because it's so critically important to all of us.
Can you give us the Reader's Digest version of the EPA?
Well, the EPA, the governor, it's the beginning of his education initiative. And he wanted to build the sample here in Detroit, not start it in some other part of the state and bring it to Detroit, but start it here. And we're going to take, as identified by the State Board of Education, the lowest 5% of academic schools in the state of Michigan. And we're going to put them under a chancellor. That chancellor will reach across the entire state of Michigan. We're going to build a 401(c). We're going to put more funding behind that those students. We're going to put a teacher training program behind that, a principal training program. We're going to put all the help behind those schools for them to be successful. We're going to put more money behind them. On the other side of the ledger, the schools who did not go into EAS, those are schools that are doing well. We tend to talk about DPS like all schools are failing. That's not a fact. We have some schools that are outstanding. We don't have enough of those schools that are ultra successful. We're going to make those, we're going to get out of their way. In some cases, I believe that administrators and other people up at headquarters get in the way of principals and teachers doing their job. We're going to stop that. We're going to make sure that the principal have what they need to be successful, that the teacher have what they need to be successful, and we're going to hold them accountable. So in a nutshell, that's the Reader's Digest version of the EAS. The governor announced last week the EAS committee. There are 11 people. They're an executive committee of 5 people. I will chair both committees. We're going to have our first meeting this Thursday, and all 11 members from across the state have indicated they will be in attendance. I'm really excited about this. It's a great possibility.
You've signed on Doug Ross to help you from University Prep. What's his mission?
Doug Ross is going to handle our chartering mission. We're going to have charter schools. We're going to have more charter schools. I believe Doug Ross is the best in this state, or the best that I know. And I've said from day one, where I have an opportunity to hire people, I'm going to hire the absolute best. I think he's the best. He's going to call the shots for us in terms of how we charter, who we charter with, what the rules and what the regulations are. I think it will serve us all well and make us think on the traditional side of the business maybe a little differently.
Talk to us, Roy Roberts, about the type of teacher we need in the Detroit public school system.
We want teachers who have the academic know-how, but have the burning desire to want to make a difference. We also want people who can teach in an urban community, and I think there's some things going on that need to be clarified. I don't believe that every teacher that graduates from a college can understand the urban environment. So I'm asking some of the presidents in the state of Michigan, if you're going to train teachers to be teachers, they want to teach in an urban environment, you got to do some of the training in an urban environment. We have some kids that have some very special needs. In some cases, they're broken homes. Some they're just like Roy Roberts in some case. Don't have both parents. Or I got a kid whose mother had him when she was 13 or 14 years old, and now she's 23 and he's 14. She's working two jobs, doesn't have a car to get to school, and you're wondering why she can't come to teacher conferences. There are some issues here that we have to deal with, and we need teachers to understand that. Not all kids are in that category. We need teachers who are committed and dedicated that want to make a difference. That's what we must have. And we have some today. We have a lot today. We need more.
If there's a young listener tonight that says, Mr. Roberts, I want to become like you. I love to read. I love to write. But the peer pressure in the community doesn't want me to do that. Joe Dumars, I had as a guest a few years ago, Roy, he used to sneak into the library to read because kids would mock him.
Well, you're right.
What do you say to that young person?
What we have to do, not just say to that young person, but what we have to demonstrate is that excellence can be rewarded, can be recognized and rewarded. We don't do that enough. If you just stop and think about the people that we reward and recognize year in and year out, rarely are the educators. And the most important person in my life were educators. We've got to turn that around. You turned around on educators, then you turned around on academic excellence. We've got to learn how to reward that and say, that's cool. That's a good thing. That's not a bad thing. And that's why kids turn their back on it, because we haven't said that's a good thing. That's a cool thing.
There's a lot of animosity out there, a lot of distrust. There's a lot of fear out there. How do you address those?
There's a lot of hope out there, too. There is a ton of hope out there, and I'm seeing a significant amount of it with my appointment, the EAS that we've announced, and people are a bit jaded, though. You're right. Six superintendents in 6 years in this school system, and every time you change a superintendent, you change the academic program. And who gets hurt in that process? Kids get hurt. Kids get hurt. We need a degree of stability, good stability, aimed at the right things. And the only way you're going to change it is do it over time. You got to do it over time. I can't go out and talk to somebody and make them believe that what we're doing is so different. But I think there are some people who are saying, I believe this Roy Roberts won't steal, he won't cheat, and he's truly committed to wanting to do the right thing for the kids. And if they do, then maybe they give us a chance. And in doing that, we're going to demonstrate to them that we're sincere in terms of what we want to do and must do for the well-being of this community and these young people.
And this Roy Roberts also putts with one hand, and he putts better with one hand than most people I know putts with two hands.
Sometimes.
And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.